head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harney, Pat Forty. I'm with the new Chariot, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarmouth, Sarah Bohannon.
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
Welcome in, and thank you for downloading the Rusty Satellite Show. This is your host, Rick Redding. Each and every week, for 187 of them in a row, I've brought you two of the most interesting people in the Ville. And I got to tell you, I'm very excited about this week's show. My two guests are both really smart. They're really doing important things, and they're talking about topics that I'm very interested in. So that is all I can do to tease you. You know that the guests are the Ali Center Chief Executive, Donald Lazier, and the esteemed former columnist with the local newspaper, Bob Hill. And I've just got to tell you, I hope you will listen to these. Not that the other weeks are slouches, but this is a really good week for the show. So very excited to have you with me. The show, as always, is brought to you by my friends at Passport Health Plan and my good friends at Eye Care Institute down on Story Avenue. Their number is 502-589-1500. Any issues you have with your eyes, just a regular exam, or if you're interested in LASIK or some other procedure, they got the best doctors, they got the best customer service down there at the Eye Care Institute. Go down and see them. Call and make an appointment at 502-589-1500. All right, we got a lot to get to in this show. I tell you, there's a lot going on in the world and in our little burg here of Louisville, KY, my hometown. I had a chance this week. I'm going to talk a little bit about the GLI event I went to, the Capital Connection. I listened to for the first time, the speaker of that, the new speaker, majority speaker, Jeff Hoover, who spoke at an event at the Olmstead. And I'm anxious to tell you about that. And of course, there's so much to say. I'll get to Bob Hill. He's in the second half of the show, but I went out to his place. I had reason to go over the East End Bridge for the first time. That was quite a treat. I did that and found Bob's place, Hidden Hill Nurseries over there in Utica. And you know, Bob is he is by no means a retiring sort of guy. He's got a great location over there. He's involved in several projects around town. He's got a lot of opinions on things that are going on, as he did for years and years. I'll talk about that in the middle part of the show. But first up, we're going to hear from Donald Lazier, and he's been on my list for some time. He came to Louisville in 2012 as the chief executive of the Muhammad Ali Foundation, the Muhammad Ali Center, and he's done a lot of great work, and there's been a lot of interesting things going on down at the Ali Center in the last year or so. Of course, we talk a little bit about the events of last summer when Muhammad passed away, and what a celebration that was for our city, and a lot of the other things, good things that have happened since then. But on Monday night, Donald was the MC at an event that was billed a protest, and as you'll hear from him, he says it's doesn't really look at it as a protest, but more of a celebration of America and immigration and what great things immigrants have done in this country, which makes it so disturbing what is going on with this president and his executive orders and the things that have happened to people because they haven't been able to get through airports or they've been detained or all that. So there's a whole lot to that over at LouisvilleKY.com, Pulse of the City. My buddy Bill Breimer went down, took some photos of a rally down at the that took place on Tuesday downtown at the federal building, the Snyder Federal Building downtown. Some great pictures. You can go over and see those at LouisvilleKY.com. And just a lot going on in the political world, and everybody seems to have their own opinion on that. And all you have to do is go look at Facebook, and you'll see what's happening. But I really wanted to share with you this conversation with Donald Lazier. Very, very intelligent man. He's got great experience in the corporate world and has come into his own. Just loves Louisville and loves the job he has down at the Ali Center. They're very welcoming down there. I tell people when they come into town that they should, in terms of tourist attractions, yeah, there's these bourbon things, there's the Slugger Museum, there's the Science Center, there's all these great things to see in this city, but the Ali Center, That's where you're going to learn the most, see the most cool stuff. And you'll see on the site, I have taken a picture of Lazier in front of the painting that the Ollie Center has just received from the Leroy Neiman Foundation. And we just didn't have time to get into all the art. But golly, what a great thing that is. I went to see the new fourth floor gallery they have where a lot of the art is displayed, and there's more coming. So that's all good. But anyway, I'm going to shut up here and let you listen to my conversation from Wednesday with Donald Lazier.
I had no use for health insurance, but my mom was always saying, sign up for Passport. And I was like, Mom. She was like, for my peace of mind. It got to be where I needed peace of mind, so I did. Now my mom, she can chill, and I feel pretty good about it too.
Together we can all feel better. Call 1-800-578-0603 and ask for Passport. That's 1-800-578-0603. Passport Health Plan, working together for a healthier Kentucky.
And welcome back to the Rusty Satellite Show. I am sitting at the Muhammad Ali Center with Donald Lazier. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're sitting just a few feet. We can see out the window the amphitheater here at the Ali Center where, it was quite an event the other night, right?
Yeah, it absolutely was. As it turns out, we had over 7,000 people attend the rally. And while some people have talked about this as the rally as being a protest, it really wasn't. It was more of a celebration of immigrants and refugees and what they mean to this country and what this country means to them.
Okay. Well, I certainly understand what you're saying, and I'm interested certainly Ali was known as a global humanitarian.
Sure.
And it makes sense that you would be a leader in the In whatever you want to call it, the
sure.
other night, but what is where does the passion come from for that topic?
Well, of course, I mean, the center is one of the things that we really try to foster here is a sense of social justice, a sense of oneness, and what we wanted to demonstrate is that people of all different races, ethnicities, religions can come together in unity for the behalf of people who really their voices aren't being heard. And so the center really does really want to foster that throughout the community, throughout the nation, mm-hmm. throughout the world.
Right. And I think as the leader of the Ollie Center, certainly, I'm sure you feel a responsibility to that. But personally, is there anything within you that led you to say, I've got to get out in front of this thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I brought my two children to it, 5 and 10 years old, because I wanted them to see what America really represents in terms of unity, in terms of being very proud of being an American. As you probably noticed, if you attended the event, we had multiple American flags out there, mm-hmm. and it was a celebration of America. And so I think it was important for me personally, for my children, to see that, to see what a peaceful demonstration could be like,
okay.
instead of all the stuff they've seen on TV where there has been violence and people screaming obscenities. I'm so proud of our city in that we were able to do this in a very peaceful, very calm, but yet passionate way.
Mm-hmm. But just to say what really is, understandably, the reason you have this protest is we have a president that is seems very unfriendly to immigration and refugees. It seems like that says something really bad about America.
Well, so one of the things we try to avoid, quite frankly, is getting into a political discourse of negativity. And so while this administration is doing what it believes the people want it to do, given that they won the election, I still think that we should be compassionate as a country. And when you think about what's happening with the Syrian refugees and, you know, women, children being persecuted, we should, as a country, support them. And in my humble opinion, and I believe that universally, everyone in this country will agree that we should have strong border security. We should have, you know, a strenuous vetting process for all immigrants, mm-hmm. not necessarily singling out the Muslim religion for that. But it should be universally applied. And we all want to feel safe as a country. And so I don't believe personally that singling out one individual religious group makes us safer. Personally, mm-hmm. I don't.
Right, right. Well, I certainly agree with you. Let's switch gears for just a minute. I want to ask a little bit about your background. I know you've been here at the Ali Center since 2012 and a career in business before that. When you got the job, was there any I'm interested in your relationship with Muhammad himself. Did you know him before, or tell me about your relationship with him while he was here?
Well, see, what's really interesting is I had never met Muhammad Ali. My father had met Muhammad Ali and Howard Bingham and hung out with them a little bit. And my family was always huge fans of Muhammad. Personally, for me, Muhammad Ali was a hero as a child for me growing up. And it had little to do with him being a boxer because I was too young to have seen him fight, really, at the time. Mm-hmm. And the reason he was a hero to me is because people in my community and my family used him as an example for standing up for what you believe in, but more importantly, be willing to accept the consequences for that belief. Exactly. And so that really permeated my life to when I had the opportunity to join the center and be a part of keeping Muhammad's legacy alive and spreading it throughout the nation and throughout the globe. And it's been nothing but a joy since I've been here.
Sure. And so you had a few years where you interacted with
yes.
Muhammad, I guess, on a regular basis. And, I want to go back to last summer because I don't know that we've ever seen an outpouring of love and support in my lifetime as this city showed for Muhammad after his death.
Rick, it was incredible. I have to tell you, while we were preparing for this and hoping that it wouldn't happen as soon as it did, the center was overwhelmed because we had media from all over the world. We had people from all over the world visiting the city to celebrate Muhammad's life. And in talking to his family, it's what Muhammad would have wanted. He wanted a celebration.
Sure.
And that's what it turned out to be. And the outpouring of love was just amazing. And the city itself handled it so incredibly well. I mean, we came together as a city like you wouldn't believe. And to this day, you know, I hear compliments from people that I meet in all walks of life and elsewhere outside the city about how well Louisville welcomed the world to our community.
Sure, sure. And I would imagine that here at the Ali Center, your attendance, I know it jumped up briefly, but has it sustained over that time?
We've had a steady increase in attendance. And as a matter of fact, during that week alone, we had 25,000 visitors.
Wow.
It was incredible.
In a normal week, you have how many?
2,500 maybe.
Okay.
Depending on the time of year. So it was at least 10 times the normal amount of visitors that we have.
Okay. And then, you know, here we are, January just ended, but January is a big month because of the, it's Black History Month, obviously, but wasn't Ali's birthday?
Yes, we just had his birthday celebration. January 17th would have been his 75th birthday. So we had a celebration here at the center to commemorate that fact. And in conjunction with that, there's Martin Luther King Day, and we always show I Have a Dream speech and other films. So we were able to couple the two things together during that week and celebrate both Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali.
Okay. Well, I know there's some big things coming up, and I'm guessing you want to talk about that. I know that there is a I Am Ali program in the works. Tell me about that.
Sure. So we have a couple of, I think, really big things that will be coming up in the summer and the fall. During the week of Muhammad's memorial, a organic festival sprung up where we had like 15,000 participants and it was called the I Am Ali Festival. And the city wanted to continue that celebration of Muhammad's life. So we're going to have a six-week celebration slash festival this week. This summer, okay. Starting with a appreciation day by the Bats. They're kicking this off.
Yeah, I saw they have these jerseys.
Oh, aren't they cool, Rick? Yeah. Yes, they're really cool jerseys. I want to get one. They're going to be auctioned off, and those proceeds will be donated to the Muhammad Ali Center. And then we're going to have subsequent weeks celebration celebrating Muhammad's six core principles, and it will culminate in July with two basketball tournaments where we're going to have upwards of 12 to 13,000 girls come to town.
Wow.
Under the umbrella of the tournament as well as the I Am Ali Festival, and they'll be participating in service projects using the platform that we're developing for an initiative called There's Ali in All of Us. So it's going to be super cool for the city. It'll be an opportunity for us to maintain Muhammad's legacy, but more importantly, keep that spotlight on the city of Louisville, utilizing, you know, the legacy of Muhammad Ali.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. I want to ask you another question about you
sure.
Personally. I mean, this is a very important position you're in, and you get to meet with a lot of important folks. Is this job, I mean, is it the sort of thing you ever could have envisioned doing, and how much do you like it?
So, no, I never would have thought I would have been fortunate enough to have this position. Like you said earlier, I was primarily working in corporations, and I managed a company before taking this position. And let me just say this, I love it.
Okay.
And I love the city of Louisville, and my family loves it. This position has been amazing. You know, I've had the opportunity to meet people that I never thought I would have the opportunity to meet. I traveled to the Olympics with Muhammad in London in 2012. That was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Right.
So it's just been an amazing journey through and through.
It sounds like it. And I want to touch on one other topic. I know the Humanitarian Awards, I guess you basically started that,
yes.
Right? And that has become sort of an international event. I mean, tell me about some of the people that come to this thing and how that's going.
Sure. So the event itself, the Humanitarian Awards, is structured around Muhammad's six core principles. We find these incredible people that are all 30 and under that are doing fantastic, phenomenal things around the world. For example, last year, one of our winners was a 14-year-old from Pakistan, and she was standing up for a woman's or girl's right to not be forced into marriage and also to get an education, if you can believe that, at 14 years old. And so when you think about a travel ban that has just been imposed, we may have had difficulty getting her in the country if that were to continue, hence why we were so passionate about, you know, the rally that happened this past, was it Monday?
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's the fact that we're trying to, you know, get Muhammad Ali's legacy to continue on a global basis, and these humanitarian awards our way of doing it. We also have season award winners. We've had Harry Belafonte, Lou Gossett Jr., Gina Davis, Susan Sarandon. Some of our MCs have been Matt Lauer, and last year was Craig Melvin, who was just tremendous. And here's a really cool story. So when Muhammad Ali lit the cauldron in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics, mm-hmm. the person that handed him the cauldron or the torch was Janet Evans, the world-renowned swimmer, right? And Janet had the opportunity or gave us the pleasure of being the MC for one of our humanitarian awards.
Okay.
So it came full circle. It was an amazing time.
Yeah, well, it's all shining a great light on the city of Louisville, and I just appreciate the work you do.
Thank you, Rick.
I'm Steve Coombs, and each week, Rick Redding and I record a new episode of Eat, Drink, Talk. We'll fill you up and fill you in on what's happening in Louisville's thriving drinking and dining scene. We bring you food news, interviews, and our take on what's happening around town. Find us on iTunes and download Eat, Drink, Talk.
All right, so I told you I was excited about talking to Donald Lazier. I thought that was a really great interview. He had a lot to say, and I had met a couple of years ago. I'd met Donald Lazier at some other thing and had meant to get him on the show. But then when I saw him in the news this week in relation to these protests over immigration, I thought he'd be a great guest to have on. And so there you have it. There you have it. That was the thing. The other big political event I went to this week, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. I went to a GLI event called Capital Connection, and all the a lot of local politicians in attendance to hear from Jeff Hoover, the Kentucky House Speaker, the first Republican Kentucky House Speaker, I think he said it was 94 years, and just to share a few things that he said that I thought was kind of funny. He said he was quote, not a huge Trump fan, but he said he liked politicians who speak their mind even when sometimes facts get in the way, he said. And then he made this great joke that he was glad to be there in front of a GLI chamber crowd. He estimated at 5,000. There were actually maybe a couple of hundred people in the room. So an allusion to Trump's basic policy of getting facts wrong and overestimating things when they come to his number and his ego. And so that was pretty funny. I tell you, I wish, and when I saw Governor Bevin speak, I was impressed with him as a speaker. I was impressed with Hoover as a speaker. He spoke about business issues, and that's what really impressed me. Because a lot of the ideas, like right to work, is an idea that I think is going to be have great benefits for Kentucky. And Hoover predicted the same thing. He said that companies will cite the right to work law as a reason for moving to the state in the near future. I'm sorry for all you union backers out there, but I just don't believe that a requirement for getting a job should be signing up and paying union dues. And so anyway, that's changed, and it's like Indiana and Tennessee have this law, and it will make it easier for Kentucky to compete in the world. Another thing that Hoover said that I really liked, is he said, quote, what you're not going to see is a bathroom bill in talking about the General Assembly. At least wiser heads have prevailed. I really think that Hoover is like, he was asked a question in general about social issues, and while he acknowledged that they did pass a couple of anti-abortion bills, it is not his priority, I guess, to work on social issues, which I think is the right thing. These Republicans, Hoover acknowledged that some of the rural legislators out there in the state consider those issues important. And I don't know why. Louisville is the only place in the state you can now get an abortion. So I'll repeat my position on abortion. If you're against it, don't have one. That's what I think. And don't stick your nose in other people's business. So anyway, that was a wrap up of what was going on with Jeff Hoover. He talked a lot about charter schools as well, and he acknowledged that the heroin epidemic is a big issue in this state, and certainly I can agree with that. That's one of the biggest problems we have in the state. Now he didn't talk much about Trump's abortion, Trump's immigration ideas. And today, I'm recording this on Wednesday, the nation is reacting to his selection of a Supreme Court justice nominee. And I think that Trump will, like all of his other nominees, he'll get his way. This guy, Gorsuch, will likely, after some fighting with Democrats, who rightly so, the Republicans unfairly blocked President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, and now they want to get their own in, and apparently they have the numbers to do so. That's just looks like what's going to happen. But I just want to say, just for a moment, about the immigration issue, is that a lot of things I'm hearing, a lot of talk radio, I'm seeing a lot of things on Facebook, people are, I believe it's a problem. They've got a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. If you know these seven countries that are on the banned list, Trump's ultimate goal is to not have any Muslims in this country. I think it's a very religious oriented ban, even though he's gotten wording that says it's not. People are just paranoid about with a fear that Muslims are going to commit terrorist acts. And the fact you should be aware of is that the seven countries singled out in the last 30 years, there have been no terrorist acts that have been completed by people from those countries. It's like really a non-issue, and it's inconveniencing a lot of folks, and it's a black eye on our country because, our country is, there's a lot of immigrants that have done a lot of great things in the United States, and it's really tough for me to watch what's going on nationally. But here locally, this is a local show, so we'll get back to local stuff. I want to talk to you a little bit about Bob Hill. He is he's a great guy. He's got a great attitude. He is involved in a lot of if you know about Bob Hill, and you know that he read his columns through the 70s and 80s and 90s in this town at the Courier Journal, told me some stories about how he would go into his office at the Courier and at 6 o'clock in the morning, not knowing what he's going to write about that day. I just love that kind of spontaneous thing. I compare it to this show because on Tuesday morning, I didn't know who was going to be on the show this week. And it turns out I got these great guests, Donald Lazier and Bob Hill. So, you know, that's all good. And Bob has some opinions about journalism, but he spends a lot of his time. He's got this great nursery out there in Utica. And, I went across the bridge and for the first time and found my way into Hidden Hill Nursery in Utica. And Bob has a great plant there. He's got a great bunch of art there. And I can imagine what it looks like when things are blooming and all that. He showed me some witch hazel. And smelled it, which blooms in January. And he just knows a lot about plants. He's also very involved with the botanical gardens, which, I had Casey Meyer, who's heading that project up, on the show not too long ago. And he's also involved in the parks, the parklands of Floyd's Fork, the parks. You know, I've had Scott Martin on the show and talked about how great those are. They finished that bike trail. You ride like 19 miles on your bike on a road that's smooth and paved without any cars to worry about. So that's really great. And Bob Stone, he talks in the interview about some of the stuff he did, but I just want to mention one little story about it. You know, I told Bob when I got there, I said, man, when I was growing up reading the newspaper in the 70s and 80s, you know, I wanted to be either Bob Hill or Billy Reid, because at that time, those guys, the importance of the newspaper column was supreme. I mean, what they said, what Bob Hill wrote about, you were talking about all that week, because everybody got up in the morning, got the paper off the front porch, opened it up, drank coffee, and read the paper front to back. That's what a lot of people did. And that's a habit that has slowly fallen off. And I would say it's pretty much died unless you're of a certain age. I'm always surprised now when I see people with a newspaper, with an actual copy of the newspaper. It's really something. But Bob's a little optimistic about the newspaper business. Glad to see Joe Girth, who was on the show, get a new gig as the I think he's called the Metro columnist. He gets to write a column just like Bob did back in the day. So I'm glad the Courier made that position possible, and I'm glad Joe's a great guy, and Joe will do a great job at that, as we discuss in the conversation I have with Bob. So I don't want to give it all away, but Bob's a legendary figure around here, and he's very down to earth. And I really enjoyed going out to his place and getting to talk to him. He had the foresight, believe it or not, to buy this place like 40 years ago in the 70s. And he's late in the same house, same wife, same everything. And 8 years ago, it's been 8 years now since he left the newspaper. He showed me a room at his house. It's full of just unbelievable sort of memorabilia and trivia. I've got a few pictures of it I'll share with you. But anyway, that's what's going on in the city of Louisville. I'm really excited to let you hear my interview coming right up with Bob Hill.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called 40-ish. It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. It comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
Boy, I finally found a reason to go across the new East End Bridge. I'm here with Bob Hill in Utica.
Yeah, most people have to be kidnapped to come out here. So what the bridge is going to change things here forever, and not necessarily for the better, but I've always favored the bridge. You know, I thought it had to be done, and it's done, and we're going to have to live with the consequences of it, good and bad.
Well, this is an amazing property you have out here. I just want to talk a minute about that. Hidden Hill Nurseries. It's a ongoing business. I drove around back here. You got all kinds of stuff out here.
Yeah, I've got a lot of unusual plants and shrubs. It's kind of an evolution. We came here in 1975. It was 6 acres of weeds and an 1860 farmhouse with a tin roof. So, as I like to say, we're in the 40th year of a 5-year remodeling plan on the house. It's endless, but it's got a good feel to it. And then the nursery thing just kind of evolved. I grew up, and my wife grew up in farm country. We always liked plants and gardens and planting. Then I got in interesting shrubs and trees and perennials and opened the nursery in 2001. And it's just fun. We're open from April to October. I have to sell unusual, interesting stuff nobody else has.
Uh-huh.
And try and keep it alive. I tell people our plants are guaranteed to the end of the driveway. Once they take a right-hand turn, they're stuck with it.
I was amazed. That may be really unusual. I don't know anything about plants, but you showed me some witch hazel out here that looked like it's in full bloom.
It's in full bloom. It blooms in January and February, and it's fragrant, so it kind of gets you through.
Yeah.
I get a little bit of that SAD in the winter, not seriously, but you know, I come on spring, and then it really helps me a lot to get through until spring.
Yeah, well, it's really a great thing. And I want to ask you about some of the other things you're involved in. I know I went to an event a few months ago for Botanica, which is the right off River Road, the botanical gardens that are coming to Louisville. What's your involvement in that?
Well, I'm on the board now. It's a 23-acre site. We're going to put up our first education building next year. We've raised $4 million. Very great board, a lot of enthusiasm for it. And Louisville's probably the biggest city in the country without its own dedicated arboretum or botanical garden.
Okay.
You know, we've got Udell, we've got a lot of, you know, Bernheim and a lot of garden clubs within the city, but no dedicated botanical garden, and we're going to build it.
Well, that's very exciting, and I talked with Casey Meyer, who's in charge of the project, about that, and it's all great. And the other thing I just want to mention, I know you're involved with a lot, is the parks department and the parks outside the Snyder Freeway.
Yeah, the parklands of Floyd's Fork. I got involved in that. It was interesting. I retired 8 years ago, which is hard to believe from the Courier. And I wrote David Jones, who I met maybe twice in my life, a letter. He was behind it a lot. He and Dan, his son. I wanted to help with that project, and I saw him the next day by coincidence. They hired me, and I spent the last 8 years writing stories about the people that owned the land before it became a park.
Wow.
You know, going back hundreds of years in some cases in the family.
You said to a relative of Daniel Boone.
Yeah, Squire Boone owned 1,500 acres of land out there around in the late 1700s. And it goes from there forward, really, up until the present day time. The Stout House, an old stone house on that ground, has been preserved and is used as a semi-headquarters for the Parklands people. You know, it's 19 miles of trails and flowers and trees and shrubs. And then they're planting for the future 100 years down the road. And I'm going back in history 200 years. So it's a 300-year swath of Louisville history and Kentucky history that's being preserved by the Parklands. They're just incredibly good people and fun to work with.
And a lot of this history and research is on the Parklands website?
It's on the Parklands and the Filson.
Okay.
Everything I'm doing, all the interviews of 50 or 60 different people, is on the Filson. It'll be in the Filson and on the Parklands website both. So it'll be there forever, long after we're gone. Like, who was John Floyd of Floyd's Fork? Totally forgotten guy, and I spent a lot of time bringing him back to life. And Squire Boone and Daniel Boone and all of that, plus a lot of really good local, interesting, fun people. Seatonville, site of a golf course. Some guy came out of New York and wanted to build a Valhalla 30 years ahead of its time and waiting for the Gene Snyder to get done. Well, a lot of us were waiting for the Gene Snyder. So he went broke on that project, basically.
Well, that's very interesting. Let's skip ahead to today. And as you said, it's hard for me to believe it's been 8 years since we got up and read your column in the Courier Journal all the time. As I grew up reading it, and so did a lot of people. But today, it's a totally different world.
I'm really glad Joe Girth got the job, kind of a local columnist again. Joe is local. He's a great writer. He's got a good attitude. he'll do a great job with. He already has. Plus, what he's got going, I never had, is the social media, you know, the feedback on Facebook and so forth. Right. I used to get letters from people or phone calls. It was really nice. But now, instant reaction. Anything you say, it's right there on Facebook. Because yeah. I can't shut up myself. I'm on there quite a bit. And boy, it doesn't take long for people to start verbal warfare at each other.
It's really something how out there people's opinions are. But, yeah. you know, you were telling me that, like, you were writing 3 columns a week.
Yeah.
And you were telling me you didn't always know what you were going to write about until you got there.
No, I needed that. I like that. And most columnists are like that. Like as we were mentioning earlier, the columnist prayer. Dear Lord, I live my life in mortal dread. Someday I'll die one column ahead. Like, it's illegal. You can't do that. So, yeah, I'd go in and I'd read the paper, or I'd be thinking things on the way into town. I'd go in at 5 or 6 in the morning, which was mm-hmm. the best part of that. And I'd sit there in my office. Nobody around, just me and my thoughts, and I could write like for 3 or 4 hours. I'd go home. I wouldn't see an editor for months, which was the best part of that whole deal.
Yeah. That's a dream job.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't. Once you get established, you know, I just kind of wrote what I wanted to write, and I don't think they ever killed any column in 30 years. There was some questions raised and things that maybe I went too far, but basically, I preferred a needle to a hammer.
Uh-huh.
You know, I preferred, you know, point things out. You can get people mad anytime you want, but doesn't usually solve the problem.
Sure. Well, considering a lot of people listening to this may not remember your column, what kind of topics were your favorites?
I was rereading some the other day. I'd go into a restaurant and just sit there and watch the people and listen to them talk. I wrote a column about a lady I called the Chicken Lady. And she came in and she raised chickens, and she was entertaining everybody in the whole restaurant. And it's in Portland on the west side level. Talking about her chickens for half an hour.
Yeah,
I never got her name. I just went back and wrote about the chicken lady. And I go sit in a tavern or a bar and just listen to people talk, unfiltered. That may seem unfair, but I was pretty equitable about it. I tried to see things both ways. But just everyday life, everyday people, you know, because I always thought of myself as kind of a blue-collar kind of guy. I went to college, but it was a basketball scholarship that got me in. It wasn't my brains got me in. A jump shot got me in, and so I just
journalists aren't necessarily brain surgeon rejects.
No,
right?
no. In fact, the best columnists were really people like me that just had a great curiosity about people and about life, and just wrote about that. They never aspired to, and I could have went at times to Washington and New York. I think had I wanted to, I just love it here. Always have.
Yeah. Well, it's a great community when you can be a part of it and when you can know it so well. And that's what you were saying about. You think Joe Girth will be successful? He knows the city so well.
Yeah, and he's a good writer. He's got a good attitude about it, and he can put his tongue in his cheek when he wants to, and that's what you need. I mean,
you got to be funny sometimes.
Yeah, well, and sometimes you just got to let it go. I would write some of the best things I wrote. I'd get angry and go in and write something in about 30 minutes, and it would just fly out of me.
Yeah,
and something going. I can't think of in particular, but. And it would just be there. It'd be honest. It'd be accurate. I don't know, but it'd be honest. It'd be my opinion, and it worked.
Well, I mean, today, I saw some of your posts on Facebook. We have this this new president.
Yeah, whatever.
And it's really challenging for a lot of people to, come to terms with what is going on in our country.
Well, basically, he scares the hell out of me. Is a lot of my feelings, but then. A lot of things are involved in that. One, he turns things over so quickly, you can't remember what you were mad at yesterday. Like, to me, the biggest thing of all, I mean, the Russians were absolutely messing with our election. Like 17 of the different people, security councils, agree that. That's been forgotten already. And now the guy's talking to Putin. Like, it's scary what's going on here and the way they attack the press. It's funny, I was looking at Facebook today. A year ago, I wrote a Facebook comment comparing what could happen, and you gotta be careful about this, to what went on in Nazi Germany, the same kind of takeover. You know, you have a country that's got some economic issues, you find a guy that promises all the answers, they get in charge, they shut down the press, they start persecuting people, they stereotype people, and this was a year ago, and people wrote and said, "You're crazy, that can never happen here." I'm not saying that's happening now, but it's the same kind of thing that's going on in terms of muzzling the press, and, preaching to the choir.
I am seeing a lot of of stuff about the media, the enemy. You know, absolutely. The administration looks at the media as the enemy, unless they're Fox News and they go along with everything they handle.
And they're very, very good at that. I mean, this was Kelly Conway, what's her name, Conway?
Kellyanne Conway.
She's a genius at that. I have to give her credit for that. And so in some ways it's Trump. And now this guy Bannon reminds me of Goebbels. You know, he was Hitler's PR guy, attacking the press and playing to the choir and then moving on right away to something else and then having the 8 o'clock staged press conference to announce the Supreme Court justice. And for the first time in a long time, Trump seemed presidential. And he wears a suit and a tie. And so he's playing that game now, too. But, you know, he's a narcissist. He just doesn't, you know, I wrote something and tweeted about the other day that this is a man. Have you ever seen him laugh? Ever seen Trump laugh? Seriously.
Really?
No.
Yeah, he's
and then he mocks somebody's tears.
Right.
So what kind of personality is that? So anyway, I'm sounding doom and gloom again, but I think there's evidence of that all around us.
Well, I think like with immigration, I think he's solving a problem that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And that's challenging. So, you know, I don't know. It's Groundhog Day, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll wake up tomorrow, and it'll be November 8th in the morning again, and we can change things.
Well, I was laying in bed this morning thinking, I'm trying to stop the Facebook because it's counterproductive when I realize that. But I'm laying there thinking, okay, we allow people in this country who are on a terrorism watch list to buy guns. Yet we won't let people in from other countries because they're terrorists. They don't have to come in from other countries. They can buy guns here. They're on a terrorism watch list, and they're able to buy guns. What's wrong with that picture?
Well, it's really scary. But as we wind up this great interview, I appreciate your time, Bob, and you're certainly a treasure in the city. I'm glad you're staying busy.
Oh yeah.
And looking forward to the Botanica and all the other stuff you're doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be able to vent my spleen again. My spleen needs it from time to time.
Maybe we'll have to do this on a regular basis.
Please. I'd be glad to do it.
And yes, we did have a good time out there at the Hidden Hill Nurseries with Bob Hill. He's a great guy, very welcoming. And thank you, Bob, for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. Let's lighten up a little bit, since Bob did in the interview, and talk about what's going on around here. Do you have a Super Bowl party or a pick? I find myself less interested in the Super Bowl than I used to be. It's the Patriots and the Falcons this year, and I have been hearing some things on online about the commercials. Commercials should be great. There's one that's going to be live, I think, by Snickers. And it's supposed to be the one that most people are going to be talking about, but we'll see. We have all those things after the Super Bowl. We talk about the game, but we really talk about the commercials, right? And so I expect to be over at a party hosted by my good buddy John Gilderblum in Old Louisville this weekend for the game. So I hope you get out somewhere and have some fun and take an Uber or a Lyft home because you don't want to be caught out there drinking and driving and all that. So Patriots and Falcons on Sunday is the Super Bowl. Another lighter topic, you know, I do a podcast called Eat, Drink, Talk with my partner Steve Coombs. Just want to plug that a minute. It is a great show this week. Steve had as his guest Anthony Lamas. You may remember, if you got a good memory, that Lamas was on this show some time ago. But they had a great event with some of the other Latin all-star chefs. And you know, it makes you think, you know, all this stuff about immigration. Look at the great food in this town that is that is in this town because of immigrants who came to this town. And the story, you can go back and listen to Fernando Martinez of the Olay Restaurant Group, his story about immigrating from Cuba. Steve did a great interview with him a few weeks back on Eat, Drink, Talk for that. My guest on the show is Don Bianconcini, who is a liquor distributor, represents a liquor distributor to restaurants and stuff, but she's a vice president of Apron, Inc., a very great local charitable organization that provides funds for restaurant workers who find themselves in a bad position through no fault of their own. Maybe the restaurant burned down like Super Chefs did a year ago. And, you know, the Apron helped about 15, I think she said, 15 workers that couldn't go to work for a long time because Super Chefs was closed. So Anyway, she's a fascinating interview, and so I encourage you to go over to Eat, Drink, Talk right here on the Louisville.am network, organized by my good buddy Dan Vonderheide. And so that is what's going on in Louisville this week. I am very excited about this show. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends about it, or let me know if you have an idea for the show, a new guest, anything that you think would improve things around here. I'm probably not likely to do something like change my theme music from Paul Thorne, but, you know, I'm open to suggestions and discussion, so we'll see how that goes. But it's called the Rusty Satellite Show. You can find it at rustysatelliteshow.com. And my other projects are louisvilleky.com, The Pulse of the City. A lot of great stories on there this week. And eatdrinktalk.net is a place where there's a lot of interesting news and tidbits, a lot from Steve Coombs, the city's best and leading restaurant writer. So check all those out, and feel free to get in touch with me if you have an idea for the show. All right, that'll conclude show 187. I'll be back next week with two more of the most interesting people in the Ville.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Ricky Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvilleky.com, the pulse of the city.
Time I